She knew there was nothing kind, nothing warm on her face. A witch's face, a Blackbeak's face. Morath is suicide. Erewhon will find you in any form you wear, and you will wind up with a collar around your throat. I don't have another choice. We agreed, Manon said, pacing a step. We agreed that looking for the keys was no longer a priority. I knew better than to argue with you about it. His eyes glowed like blue fire. My path doesn't impact your own. Rally the Krokans. Fly north to Terrasen. My road leads to Morath. It always has. How can you have looked at Kaltain and not seen what awaits you? She held up her arm and pointed to where Kaltain's scar had been. Erewhon will catch you. You cannot go. We will lose this war if I do not go, he snapped. How do you not care about that? I care, she hissed. I care if we lose this war. I care if I fail to rally the Krokans. I care if you go into Morath and do not return, not as something worth living. He only blinked. Manon spat on the mossy ground. Now do you wish to tell me that caring is not such a bad thing? Well, this is what comes of it. This is why I didn't say anything. He breathed. Her heart turned raging, its pulse echoing through her body, though her words were cold as ice. You wish to go to Morath? She prowled up to him, and he didn't back down an inch. Then prove it. Prove you are ready. I don't need to prove anything to you, witchling. She gave him a brutal, wicked smile. Then perhaps prove it to yourself. A test. He'd deceived her, had lied to her. This man who she'd believed held no secrets between them. She didn't know why it made her want to shred everything within sight. We fly to the Farian Gap with the dawn. He started, but she went on. Join us. We will have need of a spy on the inside. Someone who can sneak past the guards to tell us what and who lies within. She barely heard herself over the roaring in her head. Let's see how well you can shapeshift then, princeling. Manon forced herself to hold his stare, to let her words hang between them. Then he turned on his heel, aiming for the camp. Fine. But find yourself another tent to sleep in tonight. Chapter 41. They reached the sea under cover of darkness, warned of its arrival by the briny scent that crept into the cave, then the rougher waters that pushed past, and then finally the roar of the surf. Maeve's eyes might have been everywhere, but they weren't fixed on the cave mouth that opened onto a cove along Wendland's western shore. Nor were they on that cove when the boat landed on its sandy beach, then vanished back into the caves before anyone could so much as attempt to thank the creatures who had hauled them without rest. Aelin watched the boat until it disappeared, trying not to stare too long at the clean, unstained sand beneath her boots, while the others debated where they might be along the coastline. A few hours of hurrying northward into Wendland's lands, and they got their answer. Close enough to the nearest port. The tide was with them, and with the gold they'd pilfered from the Barrow-wights, it was a matter of Rowan and Lorcan simply crossing their arms before a ship was secured. With Wendland's armada sailing for Terrasen's shores, the rules about border crossings had been revoked. Gone were the several boat transfers to reach the continent across the sea, the security measures. No mere tyrant squatted in Otterlin, but a Volg king with an aerial legion. It made it easier for the messages she dispatched to go out, too. Whether the letter to Adian and Lysander would reach them was up to the gods, she supposed, since they seemed hell-bent on being their puppet masters. Perhaps they might not bother with her now, if Dorian was heading for the third key, if he might take her place. She did not dwell on it for long. The ship was a step above Ramshackle, all the finer vessels commandeered for the war, but it seemed steady enough to make the weeks-long crossing. For the gold they paid, the captain yielded his own quarters to Aelin and Rowan. If the man knew who they were, what they were, he said nothing. Aelin didn't care, only that they sailed with the midnight tide, Rowan's magic propelling them swiftly out to the moonlit sea. Far from Maeve, from her gathered forces. From the truth that Aelin might have glimpsed that day in Maeve's throne room, the dark blood that had turned to red. She hadn't told the others. Didn't know if that moment had been real or a trick of the light. If it had been another dreamscape, or some fragment that had blended into the very real memory of Connell's death. She'd deal with it later, Aelin decided, as she stood by the prow, the others long since having gone to their own quarters below decks. Only Rowan remained, perched on the mainmast as he scanned every horizon for signs of pursuit. They'd evaded Maeve. For now. Tonight, at least, she wouldn't know where to find them. Until word spread of the strangers in that port, of the ship they'd paid a king's fortune to take them into war-torn hell. The messages Aelin had sent. At least Maeve didn't know where the word keys were. They still had that in their favor. Though Maeve was likely to bring her army across the sea to hunt them down, or simply aid in Terrasen's demise. Aelin's power stirred, a thunderhead groaning in her blood. She ground her teeth and paid it no attention. Everything relied upon them reaching the continent before Maeve and her forces, or before Erewhon could destroy too much of the world. Aelin leaned into the sea breeze, letting it seep into her skin, her hair, letting it wash away the dark of the caves, if the dark of the prior months could not be eased entirely. Letting it soothe her fire into slumbering embers. These weeks at sea would be endless, even with Rowan's magic propelling them. She'd use each day to train, to work with sword and dagger and bow, until her hands were blistered, until new calluses formed, until the thinness returned to muscle. She'd rebuild it, what she had been. Perhaps one last time, perhaps only for a little while. But she'd do it, if only for Terrasen. Rowan swooped from the mast, shifting as he reached her side at the rail. He surveyed the night-black sea beyond them. You should rest. She slid him a glance. I'm not tired. Not a lie, not in some regards. Want a spar? He frowned. Training can start tomorrow. Or tonight. She held his piercing stare, matched his dominance with her own. It can wait a few hours, Aelin. Every day counts. Against Erewhon, even a day of training would count. Rowan's jaw tightened. True, he said at last. But it can still wait. There are things we need to discuss. The silent words rose in his animal bright eyes. About you and me. Her mouth went dry, but Aelin nodded. In silence, they strode into their spacious quarters, its only decoration the wall of windows that overlooked the churning sea behind them. A far cry from a queen's chamber, or any she might have purchased as Otterlin's assassin. At least the bed built into the wall looked clean enough. The sheets crisp and stainless. But Aelin headed for the oak desk anchored to the floor and leaned against it while Rowan shut the door. In the dim lantern light, they stared at each other. She'd endured Maeve and Cairn. She'd endured Endovir and countless other horrors and losses. She could have this conversation with him. The first step toward rebuilding herself. Aelin knew Rowan could hear her thundering heart, as the space between them went taut. She swallowed once. Elide and Lorcan told you? Told you everything that was said on that beach? A curt nod, wariness flooding his eyes. Everything that Maeve said? Another nod. She braced herself. We're mates. Understanding and something like relief replaced that wariness.
Yes.
I'm your mate, she said, needing to voice it. And you are mine. Rowan crossed the room, but halted a few feet from the desk on which she leaned.
What of it, Aelin?
His question was low, rough. Don't you... She scrubbed at her face. You know what she did to you, to... She couldn't say her name. Lyria. Because of it.
I do know.
And?
And what do you wish me to say?
She pushed off the desk. I wish you to tell me how you feel about it, if...
If what?
If you wish it wasn't so. His brows narrowed.
Why would I ever wish that?
She shook her head, unable to answer, as she stared over her shoulder toward the sea. It seemed like he would close the distance between them, but he remained where he was.
Aelin.
His voice turned hoarse.
Aelin.
She looked at him then, at the pain in his words.
Do you know what I wish?
He exposed his palms, one tattooed, the other unmarked.
I wish that you had told me when you realized it. I wish you had told me then.
She swallowed against the ache in her throat. I didn't want to hurt you.
Why would it ever hurt me to know the truth that was already in my heart? The truth I hoped for.
I didn't understand it. I didn't understand how it was possible. I thought maybe... Maybe you might be able to have two mates within a lifetime, but even then I just... She blew out a breath. I didn't want you to be distressed. His eyes softened.
Do I regret that Lyria was dragged into this? That the cost of Maeve's game was her life and the life of the child we might have had? Yes. I regret that and I wish it had never happened.
He would bear the tattoo to remember it for the rest of his days.
But none of that was your fault. I will always carry some of the burden of it. Always know I chose to leave her for war and glory, and that I played right into Maeve's hands.
Maeve wanted to ensnare you to get to me, though.
Then it is her choice, not yours.
Aelin ran a hand over the worn wood of the desk. In those illusions she spun for me, she showed me variations on one, more than all the others.
The words were strained, but she forced them out. Forced herself to look at him.
She spun me one dreamscape that felt so real. I could smell the wind off the staghorns.
What did she show you?
A breathless question. Aelin had to swallow before she could answer. She showed me what might have been. If there had been no Erewhon. If Elaena had dealt with him properly and banished him. If there had been no Lyria, none of that pain or despair you endured. She showed me Terrasen as it would have been today, with my father as king and my childhood happy and... Her lips wobbled. When I turned 20, you came with a delegation of Fae to Terrasen to make amends for the rift between my mother and Maeve. And you and I took one look at each other in my father's throne room, and we knew. She didn't fight the stinging in her eyes. I wanted to believe that was the true world, that this was the nightmare from which I'd awaken. I wanted to believe that there was a place where you and I had never known this suffering and loss, where we'd take one look at each other and know we were mates. Maeve told me she could make it so. If I gave her the keys, she'd make it all possible. She wiped at her cheek, at the tear that escaped down it. She spun me realities where you were dead, where you'd been killed by Erewhon, and only in handing over the keys to her would I be able to avenge you. But those realities made me. I stopped being useful to her when she told me you were gone. She couldn't get me to talk, to think. Yet in the ones where you and I met, where things were as they should have been, that was when I came the closest.
His swallow was audible. What stopped you?
She wiped at her face again. The male I fell in love with was you. It was you who knew pain as I did,
and who walked with me through it, back to the light. Maeve didn't understand that. That even if she could create that perfect world, it wouldn't be you with me. And I'd never trade that, trade this, not for anything. He extended his hand, an offer, an invitation. Aelin laid hers atop his, and his calloused fingers squeezed gently.
I wanted it to be you,
he breathed, closing his eyes.
For months and months, even in Wendlin, I wondered why you weren't my mate instead. It tore me up, wondering it. But I still did.
He opened his eyes, and they burned like green fire.
All this time, I wanted it to be you.
She lowered her gaze, but he hooked a thumb and forefinger around her chin and lifted her face.
I know you are tired, Fireheart. I know that the burden on your shoulders is more than anyone should endure.
He took their joined hands and laid them on his heart.
But we'll face this together. Erewhon, the lock, all of it. We'll face it together. And when we are done, when you settle, we will have 1,000 years together. Longer.
A small sound came out of her.
Elena said the lock requires.
We'll face it together,
he swore again.
And if the cost of it truly is you, then we'll pay it together, as one soul in two bodies.
Her heart strained to the point of cleaving.
Terrasen needs a king.
I have no intention of ruling Terrasen without you. Adian can have the job.
She scanned his face. He meant every word. He brushed the hair from her face, his other hand still clasping hers to his chest, where his heart pounded a steady, unfaltering rhythm.
Even if I had my choice of any dream realities, any perfect illusions, I would still choose you too.
She felt the truth of his words echo into the unbreakable thing that bound their very souls, and tilted her face up toward his. But he made no move beyond it. She frowned. Why aren't you kissing me?
I thought you might want to be asked first.
That never stopped you before.
This first time, I wanted to make sure you were ready.
After Cairn and Maeve, after months of having no choices whatsoever, she smiled despite that truth. I'm ready to be kissed again, Prince. He let out a dark chuckle and muttered,
Thank the gods,
before he lowered his mouth to hers. The kiss was gentle, light, letting her decide how to guide it. So she did. Sliding her arms around Rowan's neck, Aelin pressed herself against him, arching into his touch as his hands roamed along her back. Yet his mouth remained feather light on hers. Sweet, exploratory kisses. He'd do it all night, if that was what she wished. Mate. He was her mate, and she was finally allowed to call him such, to let him be such. The thought snapped something. Aelin nipped at his bottom lip, scraping a canine against it. The gesture snapped something in him, too. With a growl, Rowan swept her into his arms, never tearing his mouth from hers as he carried her to the bed and set her down gently. Off came their boots, their jackets and shirts and pants. And then he was with her, the strength and heat of him pouring into her bare skin. She couldn't touch him fast enough, feel enough of him against her. Even when his mouth roved down her neck, licking over that spot where his claiming marks had been. Even when he roamed farther, worshipping her breasts as she arched up into each lick and suckle. Even when he knelt between her legs, his shoulders spreading her thighs wide, and tasted her over and over until she was writhing beneath him. But something primal in her went quiet and still as Rowan rose over her again and their eyes locked.
You're my mate,
he said. The words near guttural. He nudged at her entrance, and she shifted her hips to draw him in. But he remained where he was, withholding what she ached for until he heard what he needed.
Aelin tipped back her head, baring her neck to him.
You're my mate.
Her words were a breathless rush.
And I am yours.
Rowan thrust into her in a mighty stroke as he plunged his teeth into the side of her neck. She cried out at the claiming, release already barreling along her spine, but he began moving while his teeth remained in her, and she moaned with each drive of his hips, the sheer size of him a decadence she would never be able to get enough of. She dragged her nails down his muscled back, then lower, feeling every powerful stroke of him into her. Rowan withdrew his teeth from her neck, and Aelin claimed his mouth in a savage kiss, her blood a coppery tang on his tongue. He went wild at that, hoisting her hips to angle himself deeper, harder. The world might have been burning around them for all she cared, all he cared too.
Together, Aelin,
he promised. And she heard the rest of the words in every place their bodies joined. Together they would face this. Together they would find a way. Release crested within her once more, a shimmering brightness. And just when it broke, Aelin sank her teeth into Rowan's neck, claiming him as he'd claimed her. His blood, powerful and wind-kissed, filled her mouth, her soul, and Rowan roared as release shattered through him too. For long minutes, they lay tangled in each other. Together we'll find a way. Their mingling breaths, the crashing sea, seemed to echo. Together. Chapter 42. Lorkin was given the last watch of the night, which allowed him to witness the sunrise over the now distant horizon. Would he ever see it again? Wendlin, Dorinel, any of that eastern land? Perhaps not, considering what they sailed to in the west, and the immortal army Maeve had no doubt set on their heels. Perhaps they were all doomed to limited sunrises. The others roused, venturing onto the deck to learn what the morning brought. Nothing, he almost told them from where he stood by the prow. Water and sun and a whole lot of nothing. Fenris spotted him and bared his teeth. Lorkin gave him a mocking smile. Yes, that fight would come later. He'd welcome it, the chance to ease the tightness from his bones, to let Fenris tear into him a bit. He wouldn't kill the wolf, though. Fenris might try to kill him, but Lorkin wouldn't do it. Not after what Fenris had endured, what he'd managed to do. Elite emerged from below decks, her hair braided and smooth, as if she'd been up before the dawn. She barely looked his way, though he knew she was well aware of his location. Lorkin blocked out the hollow pang in his chest. But Aelin spied him, and there was more clarity in her face than there'd been these past few days as she stalked for where he stood. More of that swagger in her gait, too. The sleeves of her white shirt had been rolled to the elbow, her hair braided back. Goldrin and a long knife hung from her belt, ready for training, primed for it, judging by the bristling energy that buzzed around her. Lorkin met her halfway, descending the small stairs. Whitethorn lingered nearby, also dressed for sparring, the wariness in his eyes telling Lorkin enough. The prince had no idea what this was about. But the young queen crossed her arms. Do you plan to sail with us to Terrasen? An unnecessary question for Dawn, and in the middle of the sea.
Yes.
And you plan to join us in this war?
I'm certainly not going there to enjoy the weather.
Amusement glittered in her eyes, though her face remained grim. Then this is how it's going to work. Lorkin waited for the list of orders and demands, but the queen was only watching him, that amusement fading into something steel-hardened. You were Maeve's second in command, she said, and Elide turned their way. And now that you aren't, it leaves you as a powerful fey male whose allegiances I don't know or really trust. Not when Maeve's army is likely on the move toward the continent at this very moment. So I can't have you in my kingdom or traveling with us,
when you might very well sell information to get back into Maeve's good graces, can I?
He opened his mouth, bristling at the haughty tone. But Aelin went on.
So I'll make you an offer, Lorcan Salvatare.
She tapped her bare forearm.
Swear the blood oath to me, and I'll let you roam wherever you wish.
Fenris cursed behind them, but Lorcan barely heard it over the roaring in his head.
And what exactly, he managed to say, do I get out of it?
Aelin's eyes slid over her shoulder to where Elide watched, mouth agape. When the queen met Lorcan's gaze again, a touch of sympathy had softened the steely arrogance.
You will be allowed into Terrasen. That is what you will get.
Where you choose to live within Terrasen's borders will not be my decision. Not her decision, or his, but that of the dark-haired female gawking at them.
And if I refuse?
Lorcan dared ask.
Then you will never be allowed to set foot in my kingdom or travel further with us. Not with the keys in the balance and Maeve's army at our backs.
That sympathy remained.
I can't trust you enough to let you join us any other way.
But you'll let me swear the blood oath?
I want nothing from you, and you want nothing from me. The only order I shall ever give you is the one I would ask of any citizen of Terrasen, to protect and defend our kingdom and its people.
You can live in a hut in the Staghorns for all I care.
She meant it, too. Swear the blood oath, swear never to harm her kingdom, and she'd give him freedom. And if he refused, he would never see Elide again.
I don't have another choice,
Aelin said quietly, so the others might not hear.
She still held her arm toward him.
But I would not take something as precious away from you.
What you don't realize is that is no longer a possibility.
Again, that hint of a smile and glance over her shoulder toward Elide.
It is.
Her turquoise eyes were bright as she looked back at him, and there was wisdom on Aelin's face that he had perhaps never noticed before. A queen's face.
Believe me, Lorcan. It is.
He shut down the hope that filled his chest, foreign and unwanted. But Terrasen will not survive this war.
She will not survive this war. Without you.
And even if the queen before him gave her immortal life to forge the lock, to stop Erewhon, Lorcan's blood oath to protect her kingdom would hold.
It's your choice,
she said simply. Lorcan allowed himself to look to Elide, foolish as it might be. She had a hand on her throat, her dark eyes so wide. It didn't matter if she still offered him a home in Peranth, if the queen spoke true.
But what did matter was that Aelin Galathinius had meant her promise.
He was too powerful, his allegiances too murky, for her to allow him to roam with her, to enter her kingdom unfettered. She'd let him go, keep him out of Terrasen, even if Erewhon's hordes were descending, just to avoid the other threat at their backs.
Maeve.
And Elide would not survive it, this war, if all of them were dead. He couldn't accept it, that possibility. Foolish and useless as it was, he couldn't allow it to pass. To have either Erewhon's beasts or her Uncle Vernon come to claim her again.
Fool.
He was an ancient, stupid fool. Yet the god at his shoulder did not tell him to run or to fight.
His choice, then.
He wondered what the goddess who whispered to Elide made of this. Wondered what the woman herself was going to make of this, as he said to Aelin.
Fine. God spare us,
Fenris murmured. Aelin's lips curved in that hint of a smile, amused and yet edged with a touch of cruelty, as she glanced to the wolf. You'll have to let him live, you realize, she said to Fenris, lifting a brow. No to the death dueling, no vengeance fighting.
Can you stomach it?
Lorcan bristled as Fenris looked him over. Lorcan let him see every bit of dominance in his stare.
Fenris sent all of his raging back. Not as much as what Lorkin possessed, but enough to remind him that the White Wolf of Dorinel could bite if he wished, lethally. Fenris just turned to the queen. If I tell you he's a prick and a miserable bastard to be around, will it change your mind? Lorkin snarled, but Aelin snorted. Isn't that why we love Lorkin, though? She gave him a smile that told Lorkin she remembered every detail of their initial encounters in Rifthold, when he'd shoved her face first into a brick wall. Aelin said to Fenris, we'll only invite him to Orinth on holidays. So he can ruin the festivities? Fenris scowled. I, for one, cherish my holidays. I don't need a misanthrope raining on them. Gods above. Lorkin cut Rowan a look, but the warrior prince was watching his queen carefully, as if he knew precisely what manner of storm brewed beneath her skin. Aelin waved a hand. Fine, fine. You won't try to kill Lorkin for what happened in Eelway, and in exchange, we won't invite him to anything. Her grin was nothing short of wicked. This was the sort of court he'd be joining, this whirlwind of... Lorkin didn't know what the word was for it. He doubted any of his 5 centuries had prepared him for it, though. Aelin extended a hand. You know how this goes, then. Or are you too old to remember? Lorkin glared and knelt, offering up the dagger at his side. A fool. He was a fool. And yet his hands shook slightly as he gave the queen the knife. Aelin weighed the blade, a golden ring capped with an obscenely large emerald adorning her finger. A wedding band. Likely from the Barrow White Trove she'd pilfered. He glanced to where Whitethorn stood to the side. Sure enough, a golden ring lay on the warrior's own finger, a ruby built into the band. And peeking above the collar of Rowan's jacket, 2 fresh scars lay. A pair of them now marked the queen's own throat. Done gawking? Aelin asked Lorkin coolly. He scowled. Even with the holy ritual they were about to partake in, the queen found a way to be irreverent.
Say it.
Her lips curved again. Do you, Lorkin Salvatare, swear upon your blood and eternal soul to be loyal to me, to my crown, and to Terrasen for the rest of your life? He blinked. Maeve had intoned a lengthy list of questions in the old language when he'd sworn her oath. But he said,
I do. I swear it.
Aelin sliced the dagger across her forearm, and her blood shone bright as the ruby in the sword at her side. Then drink. His last chance to back out from this. But he glanced toward Elide again, and saw hope, just a glimmer of it, lighting her face. So Lorkin took the queen's arm in his hands and drank. The taste of her, jasmine, lemon verbena, and crackling embers, filled his mouth, filled his soul as something burned and settled within him. An ember of warmth, like a piece of that raging magic had come to rest inside his very soul. Swaying a bit, he let go of her arm. Welcome to the court, Aelin said. Here's your first and only order. Protect Terrasen and its people. The command settled in him too, another little spark that glowed down deep. Then the queen pivoted on her heel and walked away. No. Walked up to Elide. Lorkin tried and failed to stand. His body, it seemed, still needed a moment. So he could only watch as Aelin said to Elide, I am not offering you the blood oath. Vow or no, he debated throwing the queen into the ocean for the devastation that clouded Elide's face. But the Lady of Peranth kept her chin high.
Why?
Aelin took Elide's hand with a gentleness that cooled Lorkin's rising temper. Because when we return to Terrasen, if I am to be given the throne, then you cannot be bound to me. Elide's brows crossed. Peranth is the 2nd most powerful house in Terrasen, Aelin explained. Four of its lords have decided that I am unfit for the throne. I need a majority to win it back.
And if I am sworn to you, it jeopardizes the integrity of my vote.
Elid finished. Aelin nodded and let go of her hand to turn to all of them. In the rising sun, the queen was bathed in gold. Terrasen is over 2 weeks away if the winter storms don't interfere. We'll use this time to train and plan.
Plan for what?
Fenris asked, coming closer.
A member of this court, of Lorkhan's own court.
The three of them once again bound, and yet freer than they'd ever been. Lorkhan half wondered why the queen didn't offer the oath to Gavriel. But she spoke again. My task cannot be completed without the keys. I assume that their new bearers will eventually seek me out, if the third is found and they decide not to finish things themselves. She glanced to Rowan, who nodded as if they'd already discussed this. So rather than waste vital time roaming the continent in pursuit of them, we will indeed go to Terrasen, especially if Maeve is bringing her army to its shores as well. And if I am not allowed to lead from my throne, then I shall just have to do so from the battlefields.
She meant to fight.
The queen, Lorkhan's queen, meant to fight against Morath, and Maeve should the worst happen. And then she'd die for them all. To Terrasen, then, Fenris said.
To Terrasen,
Elid echoed. Aelin gazed westward, toward the kingdom that was all that stood between Erewhon and conquest, toward Lorkhan's new home, as if she could see the Dreadlord's legions unleashing upon it, and Maeve's immortal host creeping at their backs, a host Lorkhan and his companions had once commanded. Aelin merely strode to the center of the deck, the sailors giving them a wide berth. She unsheathed Goldrin and her dagger, then lifted her brows at Whitethorn in silent challenge. The warrior prince obeyed, unsheathing his blade and hatchet before sinking into a defensive crouch.
Training,
retraining her body.
No whisper of her power manifested, yet her eyes burned bright.
Aelin angled her weapons.
To Terrasen,
she said at last, and began. Chapter 43. Dorian began small. First by changing his eyes to black, solid black like the Volg. Then by turning his skin into an icy pale shade, the sort that never saw sunlight. His hair he left dark, but he managed to make his nose more crooked, his mouth thinner. Not a full shift, but one done in pieces. Weaving the image together in himself, forming the tapestry of his new face, new skin, during the long, silent flight up the spine of the fangs. He hadn't told Manon it was likely a suicide mission, too. He'd barely talked to her at all since the forest clearing. They'd left with the dawn, when she'd announced to Glennis and the Crokins what she planned to do. They could fly to the Farian Gap and return to that hidden camp within the fangs in 4 days, if they were lucky. She'd asked the Crokins to meet them there, to trust her enough to return to their mountain camp and wait. They had said yes. Maybe it was the grave the 13 had dug all day, but the Crokins said yes. A tentative trust, just this once. So Dorian had flown with Asterin, had used each frigid hour northward to slowly alter his body. You want to go to Morath so badly? Manon had hissed again before they'd left. Then let's see if you can do it. A test. One he was glad to excel at, if only to throw in her face. Manon knew of a back door that only the Wyverns took in the Northern Fang, along with any human grunts unlucky enough to be bound to this place. Asterin and Manon had left the 13 farther in the mountains before approaching, and even then they'd stopped far away enough from any scouts that they'd spent hours hiking on foot, taking Asterin's mare with them. Abraxos had snarled and tugged on the reins, but Sorrel had held him firmly.
The two mammoth peaks flanking the gap grew larger with each passed mile. Yet as he approached the southern side of the Fang, he hadn't realized how massive exactly they were. Large enough to hold an aerial host, to train and breed them. This was what his father in Erewhon had built, what Otterlin had become. No wyverns circled in the skies, but their roars and shrieks echoed from the pass as he strode for the ancient gates that opened into the mountain itself. Behind him, led by a chain, Asterin's blue mare followed. Another trainer bringing back his mount after a trip for some air. The few guards, mortal men, at the gates, barely blinked as he appeared around a rocky bend. Dorian's palms turned sweaty within his gloves. He prayed the shifting held. He would have no way of knowing, though he supposed few here would recognize his natural face. He'd picked coloring close enough to his own that should the tapestry within himself unravel, someone might dismiss the altering of his skin tone, his eyes, as a trick of the light. Nareen huffed, yanking on the reins, not wanting to go near this place. He didn't blame her. The reek from the mountains set his knees wobbling. But he'd spent years schooling his expression against the headache-inducing perfumes his mother's courtiers wore. How far away that world seemed, that palace of perfume and lace and lilting music. Had they not resisted Erewhon, would he have allowed it to still exist? Had they bowed to him, would Erewhon have maintained his ruse as Parrington and ruled as a mortal king? Dorian's legs burned, the hours of walking taking their toll. Manon and Asterin lurked nearby, hidden in the snow and stone. They no doubt marked his every move while he inched closer to the gates. His parting words with Manon had been brief, terse. He'd dropped the two word keys into her awaiting palm, the amulet of Orinth clinking faintly against her iron nails. Only a fool would bring them into one of Erewhon's strongholds. They might not be your priority, Dorian said, but they remain vital to our success. Manon's eyes had narrowed as she pocketed the keys, utterly unfazed at holding in her jacket a power great enough to level kingdoms. You think I'd toss them away like rubbish? Asterin suddenly found the snow to be in need of her careful attention. Dorian shrugged, and unbuckled Damaris, the sword too fine for a mere wyvern trainer. He passed it to Manon, too. An ordinary dagger would be his only weapon, and the magic in his veins. If I don't come back, he said while she tied the ancient blade to her belt, the keys must go to Terrasen. It was the only place he could think of, even if Aelin wasn't there to take them. You'll come back, Manon said. It sounded like more of a threat than anything. Dorian smirked. Would you miss me if I didn't? Manon didn't reply. He didn't know why he expected her to. He'd taken all of a step when Asterin clasped his shoulder. In and out, quick as you can, she warned him. Take care of Nareen. Worry indeed shone in the second's gold-flecked black eyes. Dorian bowed his head. With my life, he promised, as he approached her mount and grasped the dangling reins. He didn't fail to miss the gratitude that softened Asterin's features, or that Manon had already turned away from him. A fool to start down this path with her. He should have known better. The guards' faces became clear. Dorian embraced the portrait of a tired, bored handler. He waited for the questioning, but it never came. They simply waved him through, equally tired and bored, and cold. Asterin had given him a layout of the Northern Fang and the Omega across from it, so he knew to turn left upon entering the towering hallway. Wyvern bellows and grunts sounded all around, and that rotting scent stuffed itself up his nose. But he found the stables precisely where Asterin said they'd be. The blue mare patient, while he loosely tied her chains to the anchor in the wall. Dorian left Nareen with a soothing pat to her neck, and went to see what the Farian Gap might reveal.
The hours that passed were some of the longest of Manon's existence. From anticipation, she told herself, of what she had to do. Abraxos, unsurprisingly, found them within an hour, his reins sliced from the struggle he'd no doubt waged and won with Sorrel. He waited, however, beside Manon in silence, wholly focused upon the gate where Dorian and Nereen had vanished. Time dripped by. The king's sword was a constant weight at her side. She cursed herself for needing to prove, to him, to herself, that she refused to let him go into Morath for practical, ordinary reasons. Erewhon wasn't at the Farian Gap. It'd be safer. Somewhat. But if the matrons were there? That was why he'd gone, to learn if they were. To see if Petra truly commanded the host there, and how many Iron Teeth were present. He had not been trained as a spy, but he'd grown up in a court where people wielded smiles and clothes like weapons. He knew how to blend in, how to listen, how to make people see what they wished to see. She'd sent a lead into the dungeons of Morath, darkness damn her. Sending the King of Otterlin into the Farian Gap was no different. It didn't stop her breath from escaping, when Abraxos stiffened, scanning the sky, as if he heard something they couldn't. And it was the joy that sparked in her mount's eyes that told her. Moments later, Nereen sailed toward them, making a lazy path over the mountains, a dark-haired, pale-skinned rider atop her. He'd truly been able to change parts of himself, had made his face nearly unrecognizable, and kept it that way. Astarin rushed toward the mare, and even Manon blinked as her second threw her arms around Nereen's neck, holding her tight. The mare only leaned her head against Astarin's back and huffed. Dorian slid off the mare, leaving the reins dangling. "Well?" Manon demanded. His eyes, dark as a vogue's, flashed. She didn't try to explain that her knees had been shaking. Still buckled while she handed him his sword, then the two keys, her nails grazing his gloved hand. Dorian's eyes lighted to that crushing sapphire, his skin becoming golden once more. "The matrons are not there. Only Petra Blueblood and about 300 Iron Teeth from all three clans." His mouth curved in a cruel half-smile, cold as the peaks around them. Damning. "The way is clear, Majesty." The patrols at the Farian Gap spotted them miles away. The 13 were still allowed to land in the Omega. Manon had left Dorian in the small pass where they'd gathered the 13. If they did not return within a day, he was to do what he wished. Go to Morath and Erewhon's awaiting embrace, if he was that reckless. There had been no goodbyes between them. Manon kept her heartbeat steady as she sat atop Abraxos just inside the cavernous mouth leading into the Omega, aware of every enemy eye on them, both at their front and back. "I wish to speak to Petra Blueblood," she declared to the hall. A young voice answered,
"I assumed so."
The blueblood heir appeared through the nearest archway, an iron band on her brow, blue robes flowing. Manon inclined her head. "Gather your host in this hall." Manon hadn't dwelled long on what she'd say, and as the 300 Iron Teeth witches filed into the hall, some coming off their patrols, Manon half wondered if she should have. They watched her, watched the 13 with a wary disdain. Their disgraced wingleader, their fallen heir. When all were gathered, Petra, still standing in the doorway where she'd appeared, merely said,
"My life debt for an audience, Blackbeak."
Manon swallowed, her tongue as dry as paper. Seated atop Abraxos, she could see every shifting movement in the crowd, the wide eyes or hands gripping swords. "I will not tell you the particulars of who I am," Manon said at last, "for I think you have already heard them."
"Kraken bitch,"
someone spat. Manon set her eyes on the Blackbeaks,
stone-faced where the others bristled with hatred. It was for them she spoke. For them she had come here.
All my life, Manon said,
her voice wavering only slightly.
I have been fed a lie.
We don't have to listen to this trash,
another sentinel spat. Asterin snarled at Manon's side, and the others fell silent. Even disgraced, the 13 were deadly. Manon went on.
A lie about who we are, what we are, that we are monsters and proud to be.
She ran a finger over the scrap of red fabric binding her braid.
But we were made into them. Made, she repeated, when we might be so much more.
Silence fell. Manon took that as encouragement enough.
My grandmother does not plan to only reclaim the wastes when this war is done. She plans to rule the wastes as High Queen, your only queen.
A murmur at that. At the words, at the betrayal Manon made in revealing her matron's private plans.
There will be no blue bloods or yellow legs, not as you are now. She plans to take the weapons you have built here, plans to use our Blackbeak riders and make you into our subjects. And if you do not bend to her, you will not exist at all.
Manon took a breath. Another.
We have known only bloodshed and violence for 500 years. We will know it for another 500 yet.
Liar, someone shouted. We fly to glory.
But Asterin moved, unbuttoning her leather jacket, then hoisting up her white shirt, rising in the stirrups to bare her scarred, brutalized abdomen.
She does not lie.
Unclean. There, the word remained stamped. Would always be stamped.
How many of you, Asterin called out, have been similarly branded? By your matron? By your coven leader? How many of you have had your stillborn witchlings burned before you might hold them?
The silence that fell now was different from before. Shaking. Shuddering. Manon glanced at the 13 to find tears in Ghislaine's eyes as she took in the brand on Asterin's womb. Tears in the eyes of all of them who had not known. And it was for those tears, which Manon had never seen, that she faced the host again.
You will be killed in this war or after it, and you will never see our homeland again.
What is it that you want, Blackbeak?
Petra asked from the archway.
Ride with us, Manon breathed. Fly with us, against Morath, against the people who would keep you from your homeland, your future.
Murmuring broke out again. Manon pushed ahead.
An Iron Teeth Kraken alliance. Perhaps one to break our curse at last.
Again that shuddering silence, like a storm about to break. Asterin sat back in the saddle, but kept her shirt open.
The choice of how our people's future shall be shaped is yours.
Manon told each of the witches assembled. All the Blackbeaks who might fly to war and never return.
But I will tell you this.
Her hands shook, and she fisted them on her thighs.
There is a better world out there, and I have seen it.
Even the 13 looked toward her now.
I have seen witch and human and fae dwell together in peace, and it is not a weakness to do so, but a strength. I have met kings and queens whose love for their kingdoms, their peoples, is so great that the self is secondary. Whose love for their people is so strong that even in the face of unthinkable odds, they do the impossible.
Manon lifted her chin.
You are my people. Whether my grandmother decrees it so or not, you are my people and always will be. But I will fly against you if need be, to ensure that there is a future for those who cannot fight for it themselves. Too long have we preyed on the weak, relished doing so.
It is time that we became better than our foremothers.
The words she had given the 13 months ago.
There is a better world out there,
she said again.
And I will fight for it.
She turned Abraxos away, toward the plunge behind them.
Will you?
Manon nodded to Petra. Eyes bright, the air only nodded back. They would be permitted to leave as they had arrived, unharmed. So Manon nudged Abraxos, and he leaped into the sky, the 13 following suit. Not a child of war, but of peace. Chapter 44.
How shall I carve you up today, Aelin?
Cairn's words were a push of hot breath at her ear, as his knife scraped down her bare thigh. No. No, it couldn't have been a dream. The escape, Rowan, the ship to Terrasen? Cairn dug the tip of his dagger into the flesh above her knee, and she gritted her teeth as blood swelled and spilled. As he began twisting the blade, a little deeper with each rotation. He had done it so many times now, all over her body. He would only stop when he hit bone, when she was screaming and screaming. A dream. An illusion. Her escape from him, from Maeve, had been another illusion. Had she said it? Had she said where the keys were hidden? She couldn't stop the sob that ripped from her. Then a cool, cultured voice purred.
All that training, and this is what becomes of you.
Not real. Aerobin, standing on the other side of the altar, was not real. Even if he looked it. His red hair shining, his clothes impeccable. Her former master gave her a half smile.
Even Sam held out better than this.
Cairn twisted the knife again, slicing through muscle. She arched, her scream ringing in her ears. From far away, Fenris snarled.
You could get out of these chains, if you really wanted,
Aerobin said, frowning with distaste.
If you really tried.
No, she couldn't. And everything had been a dream, a lie.
You let yourself remain captive. Because the moment you are free,
Aerobin chuckled,
then you must offer yourself up, a lamb to slaughter.
She clawed and thrashed against the shredding in her leg, not hearing Cairn as he sneered. Only hearing the King of the Assassins, unseen and unnoted beside her.
Deep down, you're hoping you'll be here long enough that the young King of Otterlin will pay the price. Deep down, you know you're hiding here, waiting for him to clear the path.
Aerobin leaned against the side of the altar, cleaning his nails with a dagger.
Deep down. You know it's not really fair that those gods picked you, that Elena picked you instead of him. She bought you time to live, yes, but you were still chosen to pay the price. Her price, and the gods.
Aerobin ran a long-fingered hand down the side of her face.
Do you see what I tried to spare you from all these years? What you might have avoided had you remained Selena, remained with me.
He smiled.
Do you see, Aelin?
She could not answer. Had no voice. Cairn hit bone, and Aelin lunged upward, hands grasping for her thigh. No chains weighed her. No mask smothered her. No dagger had been twisted into her body. Breathing hard, the scent of musty sheets clinging to her nose. The sounds of her screaming replaced by the drowsy chirping of birds. Aelin scrubbed at her face. The prince who'd fallen asleep beside her was already running a hand down her back, in silent, soothing strokes. Beyond the small window of the ramshackle inn somewhere near Fenharrow and Otterland's border.
thick veils of mist drifted. A dream. Just a dream.
She twisted, setting her feet to the threadbare carpet on the uneven wood floor.
Dawn isn't for another hour,
Rowan said. Yet Aelin reached for her shirt. I'll get warmed up, then.
Maybe run, as she had not been able to do in weeks and weeks. Rowan sat up, missing nothing.
Training can wait, Aelin.
They'd been doing it for weeks now, as thorough and grueling as it had been at Mistward. She shoved her legs into her pants, then buckled on her sword belt.
No, it can't.
Aelin dodged to the side, Rowan's blade sailing past her head, snipping a few strands from the end of her braid. She blinked, breathing hard, and barely brought Goldrin up in time to parry his next attack.
Metal reverberated through the stinging blisters coating her hands.
New blisters. For a new body. 3 weeks at sea, and her calluses had barely formed again. Every day, hours spent training at swordplay and archery and combat. And her hands were still soft. Grunting, Aelin crouched low, thighs burning as she prepared to spring. But Rowan halted in the dusty courtyard of the inn, his hatchet and sword dropping to his sides. In the first light of dawn, the inn could have passed for pleasant. The sea breeze from the nearby coast drifting through the lingering leaves on the hunched apple tree in the center of the space. A gathering storm to the north had forced their ship to find harbor last night. And after weeks at sea, none of them had hesitated to spend a few hours on land. To learn what in hell had happened while they'd been gone. The answer? War. Everywhere war raged. But where the fighting occurred, the aging innkeeper didn't know. Boats didn't stop at the port anymore, and the great warships just sailed past. Whether they were enemy or friendly, he also didn't know. Knew absolutely nothing, it seemed, including how to cook. And clean his inn. They'd need to be